Good afternoon. My name is Ann Amicarella. My attorney registration number is 40834. I'm here today representing Amber Torres. I'd actually like to, if I could reserve a little bit of time for a better, like, say perhaps 2 minutes, that would be great. Ms. Torres was arrested in late March of 2004. For a couple of things. She was arrested in Denver, but she was arrested on a homicide that had occurred in Denver, and also she was arrested on an outstanding warrant out of Jefferson County for an assault that had occurred there a couple of weeks earlier. She, obviously, there was no bond hold in the Denver case, and ultimately, I think it became two homicide cases. She could not post bail. She was indigent and could not post bail in Jefferson County. She remained confined from March of 2004 until July of 2008, when the only sentence that resulted from these basically three charges occurred. Now, most of that time she spent at the Colorado Mental Health Institute in Pueblo, either at the instigation of both jurisdictions or one, but she spent the bulk of that time there. When she was sentenced at the in July of 2008, for that entire period of time, she received 86 days of pre-sentence confinement credit based on the amount of time that she was literally physically present in Jefferson County. Now, the pre-sentence confinement credit statute, which was amended in 1979 to reflect that there was no longer discretion with the trial courts, was discussed at length in the Schubert case. And that case sort of basically tries to explain the purpose behind the amendment to the statute, and it tries to explain to affect a way of giving people credit. What they came up with, and I guess I should emphasize that the statute is affirmative. The statute is you spend the time in confinement, you get the credit. So the issue became, at the time that that statute was passed and thereafter, there was a period of time in which people were trying to get credit for things that weren't necessarily do them. They were sort of saying there need be no relationship between the confinement and the conduct for which the sentence was imposed. So one of the things that the Schubert court dealt with was the purpose behind the statute. And that amendment, which was to basically make indigent defendants, kind of put them on equal footing with their wealthier counterparts. And one of the things that they expressed was that they were not, they were very concerned about people getting duplicative credit. And that was something that they did not want to occur. So they created a test, the substantial nexus test, which was designed, which is actually kind of in broad language, designed though to help a court determine whether or not pre-sentence confinement credit should be credited. And basically the question then out of this test is the confinement caused by the conduct for which the sentence is imposed?
Senator Carla, to the extent that the statute was designed to keep an indigent defendant from being disadvantaged, does it make a difference that she couldn't have made the bond in Jeffco because she was on the no bond status from March 29th of 2004 until at least the time that she was sentenced not guilty by reason of insanity?
I think that it actually doesn't. And the thing is, the test is actually, and one of the things that Schubert makes clear is the substantial nexus test is not exclusive. There need not be one substantial nexus. There can be multiple nexi, I guess, if you will. And so the focus on Denver is a little bit of a red herring when you're talking about the connection, the substantial nexus to Jefferson County. So my focus would be on, here's Jefferson County. She can't post bond in Jefferson County. And it's a little artificial to to think that when she's you know, picked up on all of these charges on one particular day, that out of administrative convenience, she's sort of placed in one place. Everybody knows where she is. If the Denver charges went away, Ms. Torres was not going to walk away from anything. So,
Ms. McCrilla, you were referencing the Schubert case, and I believe in Schubert, it recognized that there was confinement which was attributable to Boulder or to yes. Jefferson County, but then it only stated that credit would be awardable for the confinement that actually was in Jefferson County.
Right.
So how do you distinguish the present case from Schubert?
Well, the way I distinguish it is, you know, Schubert spends a lot of time, once they sort of say what the rule is, they spend a lot of time talking about jurisdiction and things like that. Although I think we know from cases like McGraw, where people are sent elsewhere by a jurisdiction, and indeed, in this case, both jurisdictions sent Ms. Torres somewhere else, that it's not exclusively about jurisdiction. I think also the difference in Mr. Schubert's case was that Mr. Schubert he was serving a sentence in Boulder. By the time he was sentenced in Jefferson County, he was already serving his Boulder sentence. And in addition, during that period of time, he'd been given a PR bond from Jefferson County. So I think the difference is that here, Ms. Torres, she's picked up on all three at once. She makes it to the end. There's only one sentence that comes out of it. There's no danger of this duplicative credit, which there was in Mr. Schubert's case. And I think the court's focus on jurisdiction in that case was its attempt at making sure that no duplicative credit was going to occur, that Mr. Schubert was serving his Boulder sentence, and he wasn't going to get credit for his Jefferson County sentence based on serving his Boulder sentence.
So you would agree in this case that if, instead of going through the insanity route, she had been given a quick prison sentence in Denver and had started serving that sentence, that no pre-sentence confinement credit would then apply to Jeffco?
I think that's right. I mean, I think she can't have duplicative credit. I think they both are, you know, causing this, they're both having this nexus. Both of them are preventing her from going anywhere. But certainly my argument isn't that she should be able to walk away with more than the credit, more credit than she deserves. So Ms. Torres ended up at the end with basically this 86 days of credit, and that's time when she was literally physically present in Jefferson County. And again, I think because based on McGraw, you know, that time where one is actually sent out of jurisdiction actually counts. I mean, in those cases, and certainly in Mr. McGraw's case, the question isn't jurisdiction, the question is about the relationship and the nexus.
Well, let me ask you, Ms. Torres committed to the Mental Health Institute in Pueblo by Denver first?
Yes,
before absolutely. Jefferson County
yes,
did.
That's correct.
And in Denver, she had no bond
that's
because
right.
of the charges, the first-degree mm-hmm. homicide charges
that's
pending
right.
against her. So even if she had been able to make bond in Jefferson County, she wouldn't have been released. Is that
That's
correct?
Right. But again, my argument is that I'm looking at the nexus from the Jefferson County point of view. And so I'm sort of saying if Denver went away, she would still not be able to go anywhere because of her Jefferson County hold that happened on that very same day.
So Ms. Amicarella, what is the substantial nexus test from the point of view of which, of the present case or the Denver case? I mean, one thing we're saying is in the absence of the other case, would mm-hmm. you still be confined? But for our purposes, which direction does that go?
I'm not quite sure.
Okay, you've got two different cases. In our case, we're talking about Jefferson County, and mm-hmm. we also have Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we can say is, even if she made bond in Jefferson County, mm-hmm. she would still be confined in Denver.
That's right.
Okay. The flip side of it is, if that Denver case didn't exist, she'd still be confined in Jefferson County. For purposes of the substantial nexus case in this case, the mm-hmm. Jefferson County case, which way do we look at it?
you look at it from the Jefferson County point of view. That's the way you look at it, because that's what we're talking about. That's the conduct for which she was sentenced here. That's the nexus that we're trying to establish here. And so that's what you would look at. You wouldn't look at Denver. You would look at Jefferson County. And I do think that in these situations, the substantial nexus test is something which is a little more fluid than people give it credit for. I think it's written kind of in broad language. That isn't, jurisdiction doesn't appear in the language. So it's really about this relationship, but then it also becomes a function of what the trial court knows at the time of sentencing. And that becomes apparent in most of the cases, because in most of the cases, what we end up with is the defendant getting credit for all of the time that they've been in confinement pre-sentence, whether that's apportioned to this, you know, it just depends on who sentenced first and how that went. But in Ms. Torres's case, she was literally left with 86 days where she literally had like her feet in Jefferson County. And what I'm saying is, since the statute is affirmative, there does appear to be this nexus. It's, and out of administrative convenience, she ends up, you know, going first in Denver, plus a lot of this time is spent in Jefferson County. It seems counter to the statute to have her actually be penalized. I mean, that she's actually spent all this time being confined. She's gotten no credit for any of it, except for these 86 days that she spent in, literally in Jefferson County. And I think one of the things that Schubert made clear was that, you know, the statute was looking for a just and reasonable result. And I think in Ms. Torres's case, that didn't quite happen for her. The equitable solution, when no other credit is going to be given anywhere, and indeed, in fact, she'll probably, once she leaves the DOC, she'll go back to Pueblo on the Denver charges.
Let me ask you a moment. Sure. You're about less than 3 minutes, and I want to ask you how you reconcile the passage in Massey versus People, where the court says that the defendant has not proven and the record does not establish that the Pitkin County charges prevented, so this would be mm-hmm. the Jefferson County charges prevented the defendant's release from Mesa County, mm-hmm. which would be, in our right. case here, Denver right. County, or contributed to his confinement out of Jefferson County,
right.
Pitkin County in this case. And the court says, absent such proof, the defendant is not entitled to an award of pre-sentence confinement credit against his Pitkin County mm-hmm. sentence for periods of time that he, or in this case, she was incarcerated in Mesa County, or mm-hmm. in this case, mm-hmm. Denver County. How do you reconcile
that? I think that the difference between Ms. Torres's case and Mr. Massey's case are twofold. One is we have the situation in Ms. Torres's case where everybody sent Ms. Torres somewhere else, and they sent her out of the jurisdiction. So the jurisdiction argument a little bit falls flat. The greater and the more glaring difference is that Mr. Massey ended up with complete credit for all of his pre-sentence confinement. Ms.
You're at a minute and a half. I just want to remind you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Your Honors. My name is Rhonda White. My attorney registration number is 35996, and I represent the people in this matter. The sole issue on appeal is whether the trial court properly denied the defendant pre-sentence confinement credit for time she spent at the Colorado Mental Health Institute, or CMHIP. I would like to begin with the plain language of the pre-sentence confinement credit statute, which clearly states that a person who is confined for an offense prior to the imposition of sentence for said offense is entitled to credit against the term of his or her sentence for the entire period of such confinement. In deciding whether a particular period of confinement qualifies for credit, a court must determine whether the confinement is actually caused by the charge or conduct for which the offender is sentenced. The defendant must show first that there is confinement, and second, that there is a substantial nexus between the confinement and the conduct or charge for which the sentence is ultimately imposed.
Well, we agree. Do you agree that confinement in the mental health institute at Pueblo constitutes confinement?
I think that McGraw states that if you are hospitalized based on the offense, I think it does show confinement. I think the plain language of the statute might not necessarily be in accord with that. And of course, you know, this court is free to disagree with that, but I think that McGraw does state that this would be confinement.
And Jefferson County did commit Ms. Torres to the Mental Health Institute in Pueblo.
I think that here, I'd just like to start at the initial, when you look at what she was arrested for, the defendant was arrested in Denver County for the two pending murder charges. And while the Jefferson County warrant was mentioned, that certainly wasn't why she was being held in Denver. There were two murder charges that she was charged with. And I think, you know, the fact that she could not put, there were not bailable offenses, so she could not have posted bond in Jefferson County because of the pending Denver murder charges. So the competency determination, I think, throws a wrench in this, but I think that it doesn't change that result. The competency determination was requested by Denver County, and Denver County retains jurisdiction to see that confinement through. And while Jefferson County endorsed or ordered her to CMHIP, I think that really was a formality based on Denver County. Denver County, if you look at the entire sequence of events, is really the primary charges that she's being held on.
But excuse me, Ms. White, please clarify for the record then. I understand that there was an arrest in March 29th of 2004.
Yes.
On the Jeffco case.
She was arrested in Denver County based on the murder charges as well as the warrant. However, if we don't have the murder charges, she would have been sent to Jefferson County. So the reason she's being held on Denver is because of the murder charges. And she could not have they were not bailable offenses, so she could not have posted bond.
And if I understand correctly, when we're doing this analysis for pre-sentence confinement, the starting point would either be the time charges are filed or the time of confinement, such as an arrest, whichever
right.
is earlier. Is
right.
that correct? So for both Denver and Jeffco, would you agree then that March 29th of 2004 is the operative date we're talking about?
I think so. You have to look at why she's being held. And the purpose of the statute is, and again, to make it equal for those who don't have the ability to post bail. And here she's being held in Denver because these two offenses, which she could not have posted bond for those two offenses. So while I think she would have been picked up in Denver regardless, the reason she's being held and confined is because of the two murder charges. So I agree that the date starts on the 29th, but she would have been sent to Jefferson County, and she could not, even if she had the ability or inability to post bond in Jefferson County, is really irrelevant based on the murder charges.
But she did have a $10,000 bond
in Jefferson
that was
County.
Set that yes. she was unable to make.
I think that that's unclear. I mean, I don't necessarily know. I believe that she's indigent, so I would assume, but I think that's, again, speculation as to whether or not she would have actually posted bond in Jefferson County. But she didn't have the ability because the arrest warrant issued in March 23rd from Jefferson County, and she was arrested on the 29th in Denver, primarily because of the murder charges that had just occurred the previous 2 days in Denver. And the Jefferson County warrant was still pending, but the reason she was being held was because of the murder charges. So I think that they're very separate funds. I really don't think that there's a nexus between the two at all, because if she would have been able to post, I mean, you're really looking at the ability to post bond, but that's irrelevant here. And so what the statute is trying to get at is someone who would be confined where someone else might be able to post that money and get out of confinement. And I think that here we just don't have that problem because of the fact that the Denver County charges had no bond.
So could you address the period between the NGI commitment and the time that there was a sentence in Jeffco? Why is it that she doesn't get free sentence confinement for that period?
Well, I think from August 28th of 2006, when she was found, she's being committed only because that's her sentence in Denver.
A sentence, so to speak, but she was actually found not guilty by reason of insanity. And technically, if her status was turned to sane, she could have been released during that time. And then, but for that, she would have had to go to Jeffco to face those charges.
I think that's true, but I think that the not guilty by reason of insanity, I think that this isn't necessarily, that's her sentence, and so the only reason that she was found competent to proceed. So Jeffco ordered her to be agreed with the Denver County competency evaluation request, and I do think that that's a formality. So she was restored to competency July of 2005, and so if she would have had a hearing in Jefferson County, she would have been found competent. I think it was really just a matter of finishing and finalizing the Denver County charges that made it that she wasn't found competent in Jefferson County formally in January of 2007.
But if she had been found plain not guilty, she still would have been, for some period of time, held on this lack of competency determination in Jeffco whenever it was taken away. And so wouldn't she have gotten pre-sentence confinement credit in that case?
I actually don't think so, because I think she would have been, if you're getting the acquittal at that time, she would have been sent right away to Jeffco, and Jeffco would have been, you don't get multiple determinations of competency or incompetency. That's one determination. So once Jeffco is realizing that Denver has restored her to competency, Jefferson County is going to have the same result. I think it was just a matter of just the fact that it had been a year and a half. However, I think if that were to happen where the acquittal would have occurred, she would have been sent to Jefferson County and restored to competency, so she wouldn't have been confined at that point.
What if Jeffco's psychiatrist disagreed with the restoration of competency? I mean, but Jeffco's not bound by it.
I think that they actually, this is all happening in Pueblo, so I think that while the trial court is making that determination, I think they are, and I think you're entitled to multiple competency determinations in each jurisdiction. So once Denver is restoring her to competency, that's really based on what's happening in Pueblo. So Jefferson County, there's no reason that they wouldn't have had the same result, and there's no reason that they would have found her competent or incompetent differently than Denver, because it's all being based on assumingly a psychiatrist at Pueblo. So I think, I think the key here is that the statute really is clear as to why this is enacted, and it's really to for an equality issue with financial indigent defendants. And I think that here we just don't have that situation, because she could not have done anything, regardless of how much money she had or did not have. She could not have been released from Jefferson County because she was being held in Denver. So everything really goes back to Denver County. And I think because the defendant was committed to CMHIP based on the adjudication of the Denver charges, and she's there until she's qualified for release, all based on the Denver charges, she still could not have bonded out in Jefferson County. So there's really no nexus between these charges.
All right. Well, I want to ask you the same thing that I was asking Ms. Amicarella, and that is, which is the point of view that we're looking from? Because I know that you're saying, look, she couldn't have gotten out of Denver. Therefore, regardless of what's going on in Jeffco, she couldn't have gotten out in Denver. And the flip side is, if there was no Denver case, and I don't know if the record's clear or not, whether she's unable to make that $10,000 bond, let's just assume that for right now. All right, so then if there were no Denver case, she couldn't have gotten out of Jefferson County. So for purposes of the substantial nexus case, what I'm asking you is, which is the point of view we are looking from? Because I'm looking at some cases like People versus Taylor, People versus Hetz, People versus Fitzgerald. Those cases are looking from the point of view from the case where credit is sought. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that would be this case, right? And so in light of that, how is this case distinguishable from those cases?
Well, I think it's very clear that here we're being picked up in Denver, we have charges in Denver, she's being held in Denver, and she's being ridded to Jefferson County for specific hearings. So I think that there's a bit of a difference in those cases, because while there's two different jurisdictions, it's not as clear. Here it's very clear she's being confined because of Denver. She's in the Denver County Jail. Denver County is requesting the competency determination. I think that Denver is the primary case here, and Jefferson County is really waiting for all of this to happen with the more serious murder charges. And so I think from this point, the fact that she is picked up in Denver County and has two pending charges, I really think that, and based on the fact that Denver is ordering the competency determination and finding her not guilty by reason of insanity on the two murder charges, I really think that everything goes back to Denver. And so I just think that that's a different situation, because we have very serious crimes are happening in the county that she is arrested in. And so I think that that's really where we need to look from. And Denver County is really in charge of everything and holding her in confinement and ordering all of the subsequent evaluations. And I think it's important to point out that a defendant is not necessarily entitled to pre-sentence confinement credit just because the credit wouldn't be duplicative. I think that, you know, we just don't have a sentence to apply it to. If she would have been acquitted in Denver, we simply don't have a sentence to apply this credit to where there's the substantial nexus for the cases. And I think that, you know, it might be an easy thing to just throw the credit onto a different sentence, but unfortunately that is against the plain language of the statute and the fact that there must be a substantial nexus. And I just think that here we simply don't have that. Unless there are further questions, the people would respectfully request that this court affirm the trial court's order.
Let me ask one other question. I think you've sort of answered it there in your final statements, but under the not guilty by reason of insanity result in Denver, is there any possibility that there might ever be a sentence in Denver against which this confinement, pre-sentence confinement would apply?
Not to my knowledge. If she has been adjudicated not guilty by reason of insanity, there's really, that's what I would hesitate to call her sentence, but that would be the determination. So, and I think that again, that's really not a punishment. I mean, she had two murder charges that were adjudicated to be not guilty by reason of insanity. So I don't think that that's necessarily something that would punish her. I mean, she's being restored to sanity in the mental institution after.
Follow up then. So then there's no chance whatsoever that by granting her additional pre-sentence credit or pre-sentence confinement credit in Jefferson County that it would result in a duplicative credit?
No. But again, I don't think that you would be entitled to it simply because I think that's definitely a part of the statute that they're trying to avoid duplicative credit. But I don't think that you would be entitled to it simply because it would not be duplicative here. I think you really have to show that nexus between the charges and why you're being confined. And I just don't think that's here. Thank you.
Well, with my minute 28, let me just respond to a couple of things. One is I do think that the warrant was every bit as much a part of why she is confined as the Denver homicides. I think that it certainly mattered to Jefferson County that she was picked up that night, and I think that it matters that, you know, and it establishes this nexus to Jefferson County. I also think that the time that the Jefferson County's determination of her competency is Jefferson County's determination. I don't think it's a formality for them. And indeed, the dates, even though they're aware of what's going on in Denver, they do seem to function on their own. And they do, in fact, she ended up staying incompetent in Jefferson County for quite some time. I think it's their own. And in fact, I think also, you know, that the certainly Jefferson County had its own mind when it came to her sanity. They determined that that she was sane for the purposes of her the incident that occurred in Jefferson County a few weeks earlier. I think it's clear that she couldn't post bond. That's certainly the way the trial court handled it below. She couldn't post bond. She requested, she said she was indigent. She requested a reduction in bond. She never got it. And I believe that the trial judge actually responded to her as if she could never post bond. I think Ms. Torres would argue that the Jeffco case is actually the primary case today, because that's the case she's asking for credit on. And I agree that the issue is one of equity and equality. And so with those things in mind, I would just ask that Ms. Torres be granted credit, pre-sentence confinement credit, for the entire time that she was confined. That would be 1,579 total days.
I know that you're out of time, but I have one other question.
Sure.
Your brief in this matter seems to rely a lot on the proposition that it would be unfair for Ms. Torres not to receive credit against some sentence, and it's not possible to receive credit against the Denver sentence. How do you respond to Ms. White's answer to my question earlier that that's not what the statute provides for?
I think the statute doesn't provide for it in situations where there isn't a nexus. I think there's a nexus here. I think we've established it. It started on March 29th, 2004. It went until the end of July 2008. I think we've established that there's a nexus from the Jefferson County point of view that Ms. Torres was never going anywhere. So that's why the unfairness comes in for me.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Are you agreeing that she is not entitled to pre-sentence credit, additional pre-sentence credit, just because it would not be duplicating?
No, I think the nexus has to be there, absolutely. Okay.
But it's not based upon the fact that it's...
But she's just not getting it.
She's just not getting
it. No, I think that would be
okay.
A bit much. All right,
thanks
very much.
This matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you, Kevin.